to CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby, British Columbia.
From New York, this is Democracy Now.
Within 11 days, by God's grace, Syria was liberated from its north to its south and from its east to its west. This is God's support. Thanks to God, we have witnessed with our own eyes how 13 years of suffering are being healed through this great victory.
The Assad regime has fallen. After half a century from father to son, Syrian President Bashar al-Assad has fled to Russia, where he's been granted political asylum. We'll spend the hour discussing what this means for Syrians, the Middle East, and beyond. We'll go to Paris to speak with Syrian former political prisoner Yassin al-Haj Saleh, author of The Impossible Revolution, Making Sense of the Syrian Tragedy. We'll also talk to Syrian-American professor Bassam Haddad, executive director of the Arab Studies Institute at George Mason University, author of Roots, Dynamics, and Transformation of the Syrian Uprising. Then to London, to Syrian filmmaker Wa'ad al-Khatib, director of the acclaimed documentary Farsama, for which she filmed hundreds of hours of footage in her native Aleppo to show life during the Aleppo uprising.
When the revolution started, we just felt that we are in the moment where we can really change our life and make the country that we want, build our own life in the way that we really respect ourselves and respect the people we have, respect the government that it should be for us.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. In a development that could reshape the Middle East, armed opposition groups have overthrown Bashar al-Assad in Syria following a lightning 12-day offensive. Assad has resigned and fled to Russia, where he's been granted political asylum. Assad's family had ruled Syria with an iron grip for over half a century. Thousands of Syrians living in exile have poured back into Syria, while tens of thousands of prisoners held by the Assad government have been freed. At the Saadnaya prison in Damascus, rescue workers are now trying to access underground cells at the site, which have been described as a human slaughterhouse. The uprising was led by Hayat Tahrir al-Shams, or HTS, a Turkish-backed group listed as a terrorist organization by the United States and the United Nations. Members of the group spoke Sunday after seizing Syria's state television.
In the name of God, the most gracious, the most merciful, by the grace of God Almighty, the city of Damascus has been liberated. The tyrant Bashar al-Assad has been toppled, and all the unjustly detained persons from the regime's prisons have been released.
A deal has been reached to allow Syria's Prime Minister, Mohammad Ghazi al-Jalali, to remain in his position to oversee the state's institutions until a transition government is formed. Many Syrians across the globe held celebratory rallies to mark the fall of Assad. Sabri Shikhu took part in a rally in London.
We are going towards democracy and building a new Syria with a new system, democratic system, and we will depend on society and establishment, not to the single regime who control every part in our country.
But many questions remain as to what will happen next in Syria, which has been devastated by 13-year civil war that's been fueled in part by numerous foreign countries, including Russia, Iran, the United States, Turkey, and Israel. The UN Security Council will hold an emergency meeting today on Syria. The UN Syrian envoy, Geir Pedersen, has called for an inclusive transitional government to restore a unified Syria.
All armed actors on the ground maintain good conduct, law and order, protect civilians, and preserve public institutions. Let me urge all Syrians to prioritize dialogue, unity, and respect for international humanitarian law and human rights as they seek to rebuild their society.
Israel responded to the uprising in Syria by invading and seizing part of Syria's Golan Heights in violation of a 1974 agreement with the Syrian government. Israel also bombed a number of areas, including a Syrian airbase and weapons depots. The United States carried out dozens of airstrikes inside Syria, targeting areas held by the Islamic State. Meanwhile, in northern Syria, Turkish-backed armed groups have seized the city of Manbij, which had been controlled by U.S.-backed Syrian Kurdish forces. We'll have more on Syria after headlines. In news from Gaza, an Israeli attack on Rafah killed at least 10 Palestinians who'd lined up to buy flour. In a separate attack, Israel struck a home, killing 9 members of the same family in the Burej refugee camp. Most of the victims were reportedly women and children. On Friday, an Israeli strike in the Nusayrat camp killed at least 20 Palestinians, including at least 6 children and 5 women. Survivors had to be pulled from the rubble.
There was suddenly an explosion. This was not an explosion. This was a tsunami. Like you see, it took not only one house, but many. There was fire and flames, flames that burned us. They burn us, they damage us, they cut us in pieces. There were bodies in pieces. I was pulled from under the rubble yesterday, and I have stitches in my head.
Meanwhile, the head of the Kamal Adwan Hospital in northern Gaza is warning the lives of more than 100 patients are at risk after Israeli attacks cut off the hospital's supply of electricity, oxygen, and water. On Friday, Israeli troops stormed the hospital compound. President-elect Donald Trump joined world leaders in Paris this weekend as France celebrated the reopening of the Notre Dame Cathedral 5 years after a devastating fire. Trump met with French President Emmanuel Macron and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. After the meeting, Trump wrote on social media, quote, "Zelensky and Ukraine would like to make a deal and stop the madness. There should be an immediate ceasefire and negotiations should begin," he said. Meanwhile, on Saturday, Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin announced a new $1 billion military aid package for Ukraine that includes drones and ammunition. Austin spoke at the Reagan National Defense Forum in Simi Valley, California.
I'm proud to announce today the commitment of a new Ukraine Security Assistance Initiative package worth nearly $1 billion. Now, that package will provide Ukraine with more drones, more rockets for its HIMARS systems, and more support for crucial maintenance and sustainment. And that brings the total of U.S. security assistance committed to Ukraine since February 2022 to more than $62 billion.
President-elect Donald Trump is vowing to pardon rioters who took part in the January 6th Capitol insurrection on his first day in office. Trump made the comment in an interview with NBC's Kristen Welker on Meet the Press.
Yeah, I'm going to look at everything. We're going to look at individual cases, yeah.
Okay.
But I'm going to be acting very quickly.
Within your first 100 days, first day?
First day.
First day?
Yeah, I'm looking first day.
You're going to issue these pardons.
These people have been there, how long is it, 3 or 4 years?
During the interview, Trump also said former Republican Congressmember Liz Cheney and other members of the House January 6th committee, like Benny Thompson, should be jailed.
So you think Liz Cheney should go to jail?
For what
everyone
they did?
Everyone on the committee, you think
I think everybody,
go to jail.
Anybody that voted in favor.
Are you going to direct your FBI director and your attorney general to send them to jail?
No, not at all. I think that they'll have to look at that, but I'm not going to. I'm going to focus on drill, baby, drill.
Trump also vowed to end birthright citizenship while falsely claiming the United States is the only country in the world to have such a policy.
You okay. promised to end birthright citizenship on day one. Is that still your plan?
Yeah, absolutely.
The 14th Amendment, though, says that, quote, all persons born in the United States are citizens. Can you get around the 14th Amendment with an executive action?
Well, we're going to have to get a change. We'll maybe have to go back to the people, but we have to end it. We're the only country that has it.
South Korea remains in a state of political crisis nearly a week after President Yoon Suk-yeol shocked the nation by declaring martial law before revoking it after national outcry 6 hours later. On Saturday, an effort to impeach Yoon failed after lawmakers from his ruling People Power Party boycotted the vote. Earlier in the day, Yoon apologized to South Korea while agreeing to shorten his term and hand over some power to his prime minister. But supporters of the opposition criticized the deal. One lawmaker called it, quote, illegal, unconstitutional, second insurrection, and a second coup, unquote. Authorities have also placed a travel ban on the president, who's under investigation for committing treason. On Sunday, Yoon's former defense minister was arrested. The UN High Commissioner for Human Rights has accused the leader of a powerful armed group in Haiti of killing as many as 184 people in the Cité Soleil area of Port-au-Prince. Most, if not all, of the victims were elderly residents. According to one Haitian human rights group, the head of the Wharf Jeremy gang ordered the killings because he believed practitioners of voodoo had sickened his child. In Ghana, celebrations broke out in the streets as former president and opposition candidate John Dramani Mahama declared victory in this weekend's presidential election. The ruling party's candidate, the current vice president, Mahamadou Bawumia, conceded defeat on Sunday. Ahead of the election, anger mounted against the ruling New Patriotic Party over the government's handling of Ghana's economic crisis. Mahama was previously president of Ghana between 2012 and 17. His campaign largely appealed to Ghana's young voters as he vowed to reset Ghana. In New York, a judge on Friday dismissed the most serious charge of second-degree manslaughter against a white former U.S. Marine who choked black street performer Jordan Neely to death on a subway last May. The ruling clears the way for the jury to consider the lesser charge of criminally negligent homicide against Daniel Penny, who held Neely in a chokehold until he died. This is Shavona Newsom, co-founder of the Black Lives Matter New York chapter.
No matter the expert witnesses, no matter the people yelling on that train that day to let Jordan go, you will kill him. They will not find a white man guilty of killing a black man in modern day America. This is no different than Jim Crow.
If convicted under the lesser charge, Penny faces up to 4 years in prison. Neely, a 30-year-old beloved street performer, was unhoused and hungry and crying out for help when the ex-Marine attacked him. Neely was well known to New Yorkers and tourists as a talented Michael Jackson impersonator. In Indiana, two Indianapolis police officers have been acquitted in the 2022 killing of Herman Whitfield, an award-winning African-American piano virtuoso who died after the officers repeatedly tasered him, handcuffed, and pinned him to the ground as he cried out he couldn't breathe. The jury found Indianapolis police officers Adam Ahmed and Steven Sanchez not guilty on all counts of involuntary manslaughter, reckless homicide, and battery. In April 2022, Whitfield's parents called 911 to ask for help as their son experienced a mental health crisis in their home. The officers found Whitfield without clothes on, bleeding from the mouth. Instead of helping him, they attacked the 39-year-old with a stun gun and restrained him. Whitfield's death was later ruled a homicide. And Pope Francis has repeated his call for a ceasefire in Gaza. On Saturday, the Pope unveiled this year's nativity scene at the Vatican. It portrays baby Jesus in a crib lined with a Palestinian keffiyeh. At the ceremony, a top Palestinian official praised the Pope for his, quote, ongoing efforts to end the genocide in Gaza and his steadfast support for the Palestinian cause, unquote. Over the weekend, Pope Francis also called on U.S. authorities to commute the sentences of prisoners on death row. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We spend the hour looking at the fall of the Syrian government and its impact on the Middle East and worldwide. After armed forces entered the capital city of Damascus Sunday, bringing an end to President Bashar al-Assad's regime and his family's more than 50-year rule. Armed opposition groups have overthrown al-Assad's regime in Syria following a lightning 12-day offensive. Assad has fled to Russia, where he's been granted political asylum. Assad's family had ruled Syria with an iron grip for more than half a century. Thousands of Syrians living in exile have poured back into Syria, while tens of thousands of prisoners held by the Assad government have been freed. At the Saidnaya prison in Damascus, rescue workers are now trying to access underground cells at a site that's been described as a human slaughterhouse. The uprising was led by Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, or HTS, a Turkish-backed group listed as a terrorist organization by the United States and the United Nations. Members of the group spoke on Sunday after seizing Syria's state television station.
In the name of God, the most gracious, the most merciful, by the grace of God Almighty, the city of Damascus has been liberated. The tyrant Bashar al-Assad has been toppled, and all the unjustly detained persons from the regime's prisons have been released. The Fatah Damascus Operation Room calls upon the Mujahideen brothers and citizens to preserve all the properties of the free Syrian state. Long live a free and independent Syria for all Syrians of all sects.
As video showed prisoners streaming out of Assad's notorious prisons, others celebrated inside Assad's luxurious presidential palace. Scenes of celebration erupted across major Syrian cities. These are just a few voices from Aleppo, from Homs, and from the capital, Damascus.
This is something else. Something else. May God help this country, and congratulations to all.
This is the happiest day of my life. We were reborn. This is the day when the believers rejoice with God's victory. Thank God. He gave us more than we deserve. Just some advice. Be united and do not allow foreigners to come between you.
Our happiness is immense. It's priceless. Thank God we have no losses and no one has harmed anyone. We are just happy with our victory. We are also happy for the prisoners who have been released after years in prison. May God protect the rebels and grant them victory.
First of all, I thank God for granting us the chance to see this place once more. After 10 years of fleeing Homs, I am returning today with my head held high in pride. Homs is free now. This is the Homs we dreamed of.
I am a mechanical engineer. For years, we have been waiting for this day. We have been resisting. We have been enduring. We have been holding on. And we've been waiting for this day until the regime fell. And finally, the regime has fallen. From now on, the Syrian people are one. The Syrian people are one. The Syrian people are one. The Syrian people are one.
Israel responded to the uprising in Syria by invading and seizing part of Syria's Golan Heights and bombed a Syrian airbase and weapons depots. The United States carried out dozens of airstrikes inside Syria, targeting areas held by the Islamic State. Meanwhile, in northern Syria, Turkish-backed armed groups have seized the city of Manbij, which had been controlled by U.S.-backed Syrian Kurdish forces. President Joe Biden welcomed the Assad regime's downfall as a historic opportunity.
After 13 years of civil war in Syria, more than half a century of brutal authoritarian rule by Bashar Assad and his father before him, rebel forces have forced Assad to resign his office and flee the country. We're not sure where he is, but there's word that he's in Moscow. At long last, the Assad regime has fallen.
Okay. For more on all of this, we begin in Paris with Yassin Al-Haj Saleh, a Syrian writer, dissident, former political prisoner. He was jailed in Syria for 16 years, from 1980 to 1996. He's the author of several books, including The Impossible Revolution, Making Sense of the Syrian Tragedy, also co-founder of the award-winning independent media platform, Jamaria.net. Welcome back to Democracy Now! It's great to have you with us, Yassin. If you can respond, you were out in the streets of Paris yesterday celebrating with many other Syrians. Assad is now in Russia, where he's been granted asylum. Your response to what has happened and the lightning speed, would you say that it's happened in this last phase of the overthrow of the Assad regime?
among hello Ami, and thank you for having me. So among hundreds of people yesterday, I was at the Republic Square in Paris. We were overwhelmed by emotions. Mine, I guess, similar to everybody else, crying, laughing, and breathing. It is a rare moment of convergence of mourning and happiness, and just feeling alive. On the personal level, I lived almost all my life under this genocidal regime, and I felt as if tight hands were on my neck, on my throat, and I, for the first day, I regained the ability to breathe. So it is a great day, glorious day. Everybody, I guess, and of course myself included, have many layers of feeling about this day. We need to turn out this dirty, criminal, discriminatory, fascist, and very reactionary. I guess this is the right word to describe the Assad regime, because many in the West thinks that it is modernist, it's progressive, far from it. So we needed to turn out this page, and we are sure that many pages with difficulties, with hardships, with crises, with struggles, with problems are ahead of us. But the forever is over, and yesterday was the first day of history with all its problems and tensions, and of course, apprehensions. So it was a mixed feeling, and there are many elements that for hope, and of course there are other elements that I'd like to talk about, if you allow me.
Yes, why don't you continue? But why don't you start off by grounding us in your own experience? I mean, we're sitting here looking at the Sadnaya prison, the freeing of thousands of prisoners, many women, as you see them being told that they are now free. If you can talk about your own experience, tell us about the Sadnaya prison and its significance, and talk about why people were imprisoned.
So, in my years in jail, I was not in Sadnaya prison, and in those days, in 1980s and 90s, it was not the slaughterhouse, as Amnesty International said some 7 years ago. Early 2017, I guess, in a very good report. It was before Sadnaya, it was Tadmor prison, in which I spent only my last year of the 16 years, after I finished my sentence, by the way. I mean, look, I was arrested in 1980. I was among hundreds of my comrades brought to Supreme State Security Court only in April 1992. So at that time, I was in jail for 11 years and 4 months. It took 2 years to get a sentence, and I got a sentence of 15 years. Instead of being released, by the way, the day before yesterday was the 44th anniversary of my arrest. Instead of being released on 1995, I was sent with 30 other people to Tadmor prison for an extra year. And Tadmor prison is the Sadnaya of today. It is the most brutal jail in Syria. It is a torture camp. It is not a prison. It is like Sadnaya today. These places are the factories to manufacture the essence of power of in Syria. There are places of torture, of hunger, of humiliation, and of extreme despair. I believe that tens of thousands, you know that we have 131 people at least, we don't know about their fate. So many of them may be killed. The League of Sednaya Prison, former prisoners, released a report a year and a half ago, I guess, and they talked that maybe 30,000 to 35,000 were killed in Sednaya Prison, mostly under torture, and some of them were executed. And many, I believe, died of hunger and of diseases. So it is, we've been under this inhuman condition for 54 years, which is more than a half of the whole Syrian history as a modern polity. Syria appeared only after the First World War, and more than half of its history is under the Assad rule. Very thuggish, very corrupt, and you saw that it was rotten from inside. It fell in 11 days. Without it, is foreign protectors, Russians, Iranians, the thugs of Hezbollah and other sectarian militias, the regime, we all the world saw it fell in 11 days because it is extremely rotten from inside. So this was my experience, and I feel very hopeful for the future of Syria because of the release of prisoners, because they have given the top priority for releasing these prisoners from many places in Aleppo and Hama and Homs and now in Damascus, especially this torture camp of Sednaya.
Today, Asim, is the 11th anniversary of the disappearance of your wife. Can you explain what happened to her?
Well, because Syria, especially in 2013, the third year of the Syrian uprising is the most brutal, the most painful, the most tragic year of our struggle. Syria, by that time, let's remember that it was the intervention, military intervention of Hezbollah in Syria. It's the year of the appearance of Daesh, ISIS. It is the year of the chemical massacre. It is the year of the sordid American-Russian deal to absolve the regime from violating the international law and disarming, taking away its chemical weapons. We find now that they were aware all the time that the regime kept a lot of chemical weapons. So they were happy, or they were not unhappy that these arms were used only against the Syrian people. Now they are targeting them. So because Syria by that year was turning to a paradise of immunity and unaccountability, many factions seized the opportunity and started to act like the regime. Daesh is one of them. Another Salafi military formation called Jaish al-Islam and Eastern Ghouta was one. And they took Samira, my wife, Samira al-Khalil, with Razan Zaytouna, internationally known human rights activist and very good writer, while Hamada, her husband, and Nazim Hamadi, a lawyer and a poet. This happened today, 11 years ago. And for me, it is as much as I am happy of the liberation of the bigger parts of my country. At the same time, I see it as a criterion to judge these new developments, to liberate my wife and my friends, or to know about their fate and to bring the culprits before justice. This is very important. We know the criminals by names. And this is an opportunity for me just to say these simple words. This should end now. It is like releasing thousands of people from jail and trying to find out about the fate of others. Samira is one of these people. Samira and Razan and Wael and Nazem are among these people. And I